محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, as Jews around the world prepare to celebrate the Jewish New Year, Zionists decided to increase the pressure and violence against Palestinians. On Sunday, two more young Palestinian men were shot in the head and killed as Israeli troops attacked the refugee camp where they lived. Violence has always been the modus operandi of the Zionist entity. However, with the current rulers, both extremism and provocations are increasing. This as hundreds of settlers have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex earlier this week. The Palestinian resistance has repeatedly said Al-Aqsa is their red line. We're going to take a look at all of this on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Zainul Abedin Qaddafi, coordinator of Zakzaki Foundation, South Africa, out of Cape Town. And Zafar Bangesh, director, Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, out of Toronto. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off in Cape Town. There were at least two more Palestinians killed today and several injured. And it appears that we're practically seeing at least one Palestinian killed each day. The number so far this year of Palestinians been killed has risen to 249. Quite unbelievable. Your thoughts, your analysis of what's going on, specifically why this is happening in this way this year.
Thank you so much for having me. Of course, we see the ongoing aggression from the illegitimate Zionist regime, and these attacks that are happening on a daily basis up until today, where the death toll has risen to 249 Palestinian innocent Palestinians killed, is a sign of the fading of the illegitimate Zionist regime. It seems that since the 2021 as well as going into 2022 with the joint Saif al-Quds Forum, where we saw the unity forged between the resistance factions in Palestine, we saw that the resistance capability of Palestinians has increased vastly. Palestinians today, they have access to precision-guided missiles, and they are using all kinds of warfare to resist by arms the illegitimate Zionist regime. And today, the strength amongst Palestinian resistance is of such a nature that it has not been seen in the history of the resistance against the illegitimate regime. And therefore, they are trying to show that there is still a balance of power, that the Zionist regime still has the upper hand. But as we have seen with the Operation Saif al-Quds, and subsequent to that, that the Palestinians are not only defeating Israeli illegitimate regime's war tactics, but we are also paving the way for a definite victory to come to the Palestinians. And therefore, the Zionist regime, they do these periodic attacks to show the world that they still have the power, although the reality on the ground is that their power is weakening, and that soon a definite victory will come to the resistance.
Well, Zafar, to endure this type of violence for more than 80 years and not break, it takes a special type of tenacity. To what do you attribute the resilience and the resistance of the Palestinians?
Well, basically, the Palestinians have shown that they are not going to be cowed down by these Zionist terrorists. There are several factors. Number one, The Palestinians have obviously found their strength in their iman, in their faith. The overwhelming majority of the Palestinians are Muslims. Of course, there are Christians as well, but the Christians are equally committed. They are also equal partners in this struggle against the Zionist occupiers that are terrorizing the Palestinian people. In fact, we witness that it's not just Palestinian boys or men that are fighting, but there are even Palestinian girls and women that are resisting the occupation. Again, it has to be attributed to their very strong faith and very strong determination to achieve freedom. You know, as Zain al-Abidin pointed out, the Palestinians have been resisting right from day one for more than 80 years. They've been resisting the Zionists. And initially, the Palestinians obviously were not well organized, but today they are very well organized, particularly if we look at the Jenin refugee camp, where although the Zionists continue to attack it, but they are terrified of entering into the camp itself because the Zionists know that this is going to cost them a lot of casualties and they simply cannot afford to bear them. I also want to point out that the Zionists have intensified their atrocities and their killings because they are becoming desperate in the face of the well-organized resistance of the Palestinian people. And of course, there are broader issues as well that are involved that we can, of course, talk about. But I would say that the strength of the Palestinian people resides primarily in their very strong faith and their fearlessness and their willingness to achieve martyrdom in the face of these barbarities. And that is what is really terrifying these Zionist occupiers.
Hmm. Well, Zain al-Abidin, in this 75 years or so, we have seen generation after generation, of course, of the Palestinians resist. But right now, it seems like the younger generation have a special determination right now to actually fight to regain control over their homeland. Your thoughts about that, and why is this the case?
Yes, if we look at the issue of Palestine for the last 75 to 80 years, we see that all methods for the liberation of Palestinians has failed. Negotiations has failed. The Oslo Accords and different accords has failed. Different agreements has failed. The various United Nations resolutions taken on the Palestinian issue has failed. A negotiation sitting around the table, waiting for international intervention. Every other method for the liberation of Palestinian people has failed dismally. And after so many years, if we look at it now, 75 to 80 years, I think that the young people have come to terms with the fact that there is no other way. When an aggressor, which is the Zionist regime, comes forward with force, with arms, with state-sponsored terrorism, using high-tech warfare against a people to usurp their land, that there can only be one resolution, and that is to defend by arms their land, their families, their women, their homes, and their right to independence. And therefore, we see, I think, now more than ever, with the unification of the various resistance factions and the support from the resistance axis, being the Islamic Republic of Iran and their allies like Hezbollah and others, that the youth have come to terms that they are being misled on other fronts, and the only time when the enemy takes them seriously is when they resist by arms in defense of their land and the families. And therefore, today more than ever, we see the zeal amongst those brave warriors in Palestine, those young ones that come forward to defend themselves and to fight for liberation.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of this story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Zafar, do you think the regime is trying to distract from all of the negative news and discontent it is facing from the settler colonials, other settler colonials, as another week of protests have just passed? Do you see this internal combination playing any role on this increased pressure that we're now seeing on Palestinians?
Oh, absolutely. This is what the Zionists have historically done. Whenever they face internal problems that they cannot overcome, as they are facing them right now, these disturbances or these protests have been going on for months now against the so-called judicial reforms, and they have been unable, the regime has been unable to quell those protests internally. So they find this a very useful distraction to go on a killing spree against the Palestinian people. You see, there is one thing that unites all the Israelis, whether they are on the left or on the right or anywhere in between. So long as they are killing the Palestinians, all of them unite. They all want to kill the Palestinians. I mean, you know, only a couple of weeks ago, Netanyahu openly declared that Israel will continue to usurp more and more land. He, of course, he was referring to the West Bank, but he uses the expression Judea and Samaria, this biblical name. In fact, the Zionists only ruled historically only for about 60 to 70 years over there. Beyond that, they have absolutely no presence, but they are masters of creating myths, and that's what they continuously use. And so they try to confuse people inside Israel that they are fighting in order to regain their so-called historical land, when in fact the Zionists are alien invaders in Palestine. So it is absolutely true that this escalation in the atrocities have occurred, because we see that this regime is infested by neo-Nazis. They are even more criminal-minded than other Zionists, and they know that if they continue to kill the Palestinians, they can probably mobilize the Israeli population behind them, and these protests that are taking place against them, that they would somehow peter out, and these neo-Nazis will continue to rule this illegitimate Zionist entity.
Well, actually, staying with you, Zafar, picking up on something that you said about the one thing that we can count on is actually that they're in solidarity with each other, all the colonial settler colonists there. There was a video that went viral this week of an Israeli soldier who was against actually the changes in the whole judicial reform, but she actually said that she needed to have a government that she knew would support them, because she was a pilot, and as she's shooting and could kill Palestinians and Palestinian kids, she needed to know that there was a strong support system. I mean, the mentality is absolutely amazing and depraved. What do you attribute that to? I'll throw this back to Zain al-Abidin.
You see, what is happening is that as far as the Zionists are concerned, they don't consider the Palestinian people as human beings. If you look at the history of the Zionists, they have, at various stages, referred to the Palestinians as cockroaches. They've referred to the Palestinians as subhumans. Current ministers in the Zionist regime have said that Palestinian lives do not matter. The only lives that matter are those of the Zionist Jews. So you can see this racist mentality that has totally dominated the thinking of the Zionist occupiers of occupied Palestine. And so I'm not surprised at all that this pilot would make statements like that. There are others that have made similarly racist statements. We recall, you know, when Yitzhak Rabin was the prime minister of Israel, when the Intifada was raging, he had ordered thousands of clubs, and he said that we are going to break the bones of the Palestinian people. And they continue to do so. And they continue to raid Palestinian homes, Palestinian villages. You know, a few years ago, an entire Palestinian family was burnt alive inside their homes. So we know that these people are absolute barbarians. They have no regard for human life, especially of Palestinian lives, because they consider that Palestinians are competing with them for this land, and they don't want the Palestinians there. And they're trying to drive them out, but they cannot, because the Palestinians are determined to fight for their rights. They've been left with no choice, and they will continue to struggle. And ultimately, the victory will be theirs, because the international situation is evolving in a manner that is leading towards the obliteration of this racist Zionist entity.
Well, Zain al-Abidin, Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement, is supposed to be the most solemn day on the Jewish calendar, but it is used in the Zionist entity to tighten control and restrictions over the Palestinians, as well as to intimidate them and to kill more Palestinians. I mean, what does this mean? Is it that those ruling the entity are not really practicing Jews, or that being a Zionist takes precedence over Judaism for those living in that entity?
Look, the Zionist regime is an illegitimate regime in its totality, and therefore they do not care about Yom Kippur or any other holiday, be it a religious and a sanctified day for the Jews or for anyone else in the world. When it comes to the destruction of Palestinians, we have seen for the last 80 years the ruthless, inhumane hand of the Zionist regime. And therefore, we will not expect a regime which is void of humanity to stop the aggression on the basis of a day that's supposed to be sanctified for the Jews. When it comes to the leadership of the illegitimate regime, many true Jews, especially the group that President Raisi said Raisi met with in the recent trip to the United Nations, and he met with the real Jews that were based in America, who completely shun this notion of a Zionist regime and a Zionist state, and they do not agree with the aggression against not only Palestinian people, but against any innocent people of the world. However, the Zionist regime, be they the leadership of the regime, whether they claim to be Jewish or any other religion, it falls away because they have one goal in place, and that is to wipe the world free from the Palestinian people, to completely usurp the land by any and all means necessary, to steal the minerals, and of course to complete the program of genocide upon the Palestinian people. But of course, with the ongoing resistance, with this increased understanding of resisting oppression, injustice, and tyranny that we have seen for the last 80 years, we know that this project of genocide will fail. And of course, as Brother Zafar said, that the illegitimate regime will be obliterated, destroyed, and wiped from the earth.
Well, Zafar, each holiday seems to be used as an excuse for the Zionist regime to add to the misery of the natives. And now the Gaza Strip, which the Zionists have already basically cut off from the world, has stopped any deliveries and shut the crossing from the West Bank. I mean, in general, does the regime just get its energy from the increased misery of Palestinian? And what makes the rest of the world turn such a blind eye to this?
You see, we need to understand that the Zionist entity is a colonial settler entity, and the overwhelming majority of its population comprises settlers. So I would call them squatters, actually, not settlers. These are squatters, illegal squatters into Palestine from North America, from Europe, from Eastern and Western Europe, and Russia. So when we talk about the rest of the world, we need to be careful in the sense that the rest of the world, actually, the real part of the world that are the part of the world that supports the Zionists are the ones that are supplying the manpower to the Zionist entity. Mm-hmm. That part of the world is also supplying them finances and weapons. So these are actually kith and kin of the Western regimes that are in occupation of Palestine. If you look at the rest of the world, when you talk about, for instance, Africa or Asia, there isn't any support for the Zionist occupiers. In fact, there are a lot of countries in the world, the overwhelming majority of the countries in the world. And that is reflected, for instance, whenever there is a vote in the UN General Assembly, the overwhelming majority of the countries of the world vote against the atrocities that the Zionists are perpetrating. But because of the fact that the Western regimes that dominate the UN Security Council, and they are the ones that are supplying manpower, money, weapons, so they are the ones that are supporting these Zionist atrocities, and that's why they turn a blind eye to what the Zionists are doing, because it's their own kith and kin. And they are part and parcel of this conspiracy to occupy, to continue to maintain this colonial settler entity in the heartland of Islam.
Zain al-Abidine, as the world is shifting from a unilateral to a multilateral political dynamic, do you think that we'll see a change? Zafar just talked about the Western regimes and their total support for the Zionist entity. But in general, do you think that we'll see a change as far as their support for the regime and in general for the Palestinians and increasing the pressure on the Israeli regime?
I don't think that we will see a different response from the Western countries with regards to the Zionist regime, their crimes and the atrocities in Palestine. What we have been seeing is when countries such as Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, countries such as Iraq, perhaps Cuba and others, when they come forward and they offer support to the Palestinian peoples, when they criticize and stand against the crimes of the illegal, illegitimate regime, that they are often opposed by the Western countries. And I think that the same narrative will continue as we see the world transforming and we see the global shift in consciousness. Those regimes will, as before, continue to support blindly and to cover up the crimes of the illegitimate regime. They will continue to stand against those countries that speak the truth and that support the oppressed, like the Islamic Republic of Iran. But it won't change the outcome and the end result. The end result that we are seeing is that Palestinian people are becoming more conscious, they are actively engaging in the acts of resistance, and that the resistance axis is in full support of the resistance factions in Palestine. And so with the Western countries refraining from supporting the resistance in Palestine and the blind support to the Zionist regime, it will not change this end result. And the end result is that complete liberation will be fought for and attained by the Palestinians.
And Zafar, the Palestinian resistance has said that the regime will pay for its increased aggression. Where do you see this going? Because the Zionists continue to get more and more aggressive. And of course, the resistance front continually get more and more experienced and better equipped.
I think we need to look at the situation in Palestine in a much broader context. There are two separate fronts. One is the internal front in occupied Palestine, where the Palestinians are becoming more organized and better equipped and more determined. And the second is the environment around the occupied Palestine regime. There, what we are witnessing is that the resistance front is becoming much more powerful. It's the Islamic Republic of Iran, it's the Hezbollah, Iraq and Syria, etc. This overall situation is now leading towards an environment in which it would be virtually impossible for the Zionists to defend themselves. And I look forward to the day when this happens, because that would be the end of the Zionist entity in occupied Palestine.
And on that note, I appreciate both of you for being with us. Thank you so much. Out of Cape Town, Zain al-Abidine Gaddafi, Coordinator Zak Zaki Foundation, South Africa, Zafar Bangash, Director, Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, out of Toronto. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, sounding out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 33rd verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وليستعفف الذين لا يجدون نكاحا حتى يغنيهم الله من فضله والذين يبتغون الكتاب مما ملكت أيمانكم فكاتبوهم إن علمتم فيهم خيرا وآتوهم مما لله الذي آتاكم ولا تكرهوا فتياتكم على البغاء إن أردنا تحصنا لتبتغوا عرض الحياة الدنيا ومن يكرهن فإن الله من بعد إكراههن غفور رحيم.
But let them who find not the means for marriage abstain from sexual relations until Allah enriches them from His bounty. And those who seek a contract for eventual emancipation from among whom your right hands possess, then make a contract with them if you know there is within them goodness, and give them from the wealth of Allah which He has given you. And do not compel your slave girls to prostitution if they desire chastity, to seek thereby the temporary interests of worldly life. And if someone should compel them, then indeed Allah is to them, after their compulsion, forgiving and merciful.
So, as you listen to the verse, brothers and sisters, the verse at first gave the order of chastity. وَلْيَسْتَعْفِفِ الَّذِينَ لَا يَجِدُونَ نِكَاحًا. And then turned the discussion to an important concept, the concept of slavery. We said that Islam fought against this evil tree, tried to wipe out this evil tree, and did not develop it. Islam proposed different novel ways to free the slaves. And actually, even for keeping the slaves and for setting them free in one way, specified way of mukatiba, Islam even set conditions for the benefit of the slaves. So, you have to know that they are capable of controlling their own lives, they are independent enough, and then you have to help them by giving them the amount of wealth that Almighty Allah has bestowed upon you. أَتُهُمْ مِنْ مَالِ اللَّهِ الَّذِي آتَاكُمْ. But the verse continues, وَلَا تُكْرِهُ فَتَيَاتِكُمْ عَلَى الْبِغَاءِ إِنْ أَرَدْنَا تَحَسُّنَا. And do not compel your slave girls to prostitution when they desire chastity. This matter of slavery, dear listeners, the system of war that was prevalent at that time, the prisoners were used to be slaves, and Islam reciprocated it. As today, prisoners are kept in camps, and we also must observe international rules of war to the extent that these rules are consistent with our religion. But then, after this important point, One of the evil acts of some worldly persons towards the slaves is mentioned in the verse. So it says, "Do not compel your slave girls to prostitution when they desire chastity." وَلَا تُكْرِهُ فَتَيَاتِكُمْ عَلَى الْبِغَاءِ إِنْ أَرَدْنَا تَحَسُّنًا. In order that you may make a gain in the life of the world. لِتَبْتَغُوا عَرَضَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. Dear listeners, some of the commentators have said about the occasion of revelation of this phrase that Abdullah ibn Ubay had 6 slave girls and he compelled them to sell their honor for earning money for him. When the ordinance of Islam about struggling against unchaste acts in this surah specifically was issued, the slave girls came to Prophet ﷺ and complained about this matter. Then, at this time, this verse was revealed and prohibited this action. This is the occasion of revelation of this part of the 33rd verse of chapter Nur.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, this part of the verse, dear listeners, is specifically, وَلَا تُكْرِهُ فَتَيَاتِكُمْ عَلَى الْبِغَاءِ إِنْ أَرَدْنَا تَحَسُّنًا. Do not compel your slave girls to prostitution when they desire chastity, shows that people were so much involved in immoral corruption and deviation in the age of ignorance that even after the advent of Islam, some people used to continue their previous acts. Some people like this, that we talked about in occasion of revelation, compelled their slave girls to sell their own honor, to earn money to give it to him as the owner. This status existed until the time when this verse was sent down and put an end to this condition. But unfortunately, even in our age, in some countries, that they apparently advocate civilization and human rights, this action is seen very easily. Even in our country, when the previous regime was ruling, this matter was carried out terribly, and we had many problems, and we could see some of the most devilish schemes. And this is how Islam fought against this evil tree of corruption and slavery. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, and that's when faith begins.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iraq started its war on Iran 43 years ago today. In the beginning hours, Iraqi bombs rained down on military bases and airports of the Islamic Republic. Within a few hours, a retaliatory operation was planned by Iran's air forces, codenamed Kaman 99. A gathering was held in Tehran on Saturday to mark the anniversary of this operation during the Sacred Defense Week.
The Air Force, as a force with rapid reaction capacity, intervened in a critical situation and bombed the enemy's bases. The experts in the world believe that our Air Force is not capable of confronting the enemy, but 140 airplanes carried out this operation, along with other airplanes that took pictures of the enemy's headquarters.
Iraq deployed 192 warplanes to attack 10 bases and airports on the first day of the war. But Operation Kaman 99 destroyed Saddam's ominous dream of conquering Tehran in just 6 days.
This operation turned the Baathist forces' dream of conquering Tehran in 6 days into a bitter nightmare. After 3 days, the Iraqi Air Force had no ability to confront the Iranian Air Force. And from here, Iranian skies became safe and the ground for the liberation of Khorramshahr was prepared.
Participants in the event also talked about the West's intervention in the war in support of Iraq.
The Western countries supported Saddam to attack Iran with the aim of destroying the Islamic Revolution. Saddam initially attacked the Air Force because he knew how important they were.
This operation and other operations that took place during the 8 years of Saddam's imposed war against Iran show the strength and solidity of the Islamic Republic, which has been achieved by the committed and expert forces of the country. Tehran.
One year since the fatal shooting of Black Londoner Chris Cabba, the British police officer alleged to have shot him in the head has been charged with murder. The officer, who's been granted anonymity by a court order, is known by the codename NX121 and has been remanded in custody, which means he'll stay in jail until his court case, which is due to start next year. Mr. Kaba's killing sparked anti-government protests in the UK and once more shone the spotlight on persistent accusations of British police brutality and institutional racism. The Kaba family released a statement welcoming the news of the murder charge and reiterated their calls for justice to be served.
Chris was so very loved by our family and all his friends. He had a bright future ahead of him, but his life was cut short. Our family and our wider community must see justice for Chris. We welcome this charging decision, which could not have come too soon. Now we await the trial of the firearms officer without delay and hope and pray that justice will be served.
Chris Kaba was unarmed at the time of his killing, caused by a single bullet fired to the head by a police officer as he drove through the south of the British capital. His family have said many times they believe that if Chris was white, the police would have responded differently and that he'd still be alive today.
Supporters say that while the charge is welcome, they must keep the pressure up to ensure some semblance of justice is served to Mr. Kaba's family. Stephanie Lightfoot Bennett's twin brother, Liam Patterson, was killed in police custody over 3 decades ago, and she's acutely aware of the process families have to go through in their fight for accountability.
In order for justice to be seen, and for the wider public, in order to feel safe with the history of the Met Police and the police in general, we need to keep this pressure up. We need to bring these officers and any future officers to book. The one way we can keep up pressure is to march and have our voices heard. Every last Saturday of October, United Families and Friends campaign march from Trafalgar Square at midday down Whitehall to Downing Street so the families' voices can be heard.
The charge of Officer NX121 will only renew the focus on Britain's security services, from long-standing charges of institutional racism, an epidemic of sexual assaults by police officers, and the ongoing persecution of journalists. Trust in the police force is at an all-time low, and as things stand, doesn't look like it will be restored among the public anytime soon. Issa Ali, London.
Lebanese and Palestinian factions have held an annual commemoration for the Sabra and Shatila massacre in Beirut. The 41st anniversary of the tragic killings was attended by prominent figures and dozens of foreign activists. Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General declared that it is an honor for the resistance front in the region to support Palestine.
If the Palestinians didn't have determination and a will to fight, no support from anywhere would be beneficial. Some accuse the Palestinians that this is not their fight. Iran is supporting Palestine so that the Palestinian people can liberate their land. Palestinian land is for Palestine and the Palestinians, and it will remain as such. And all the support is only in order to assist the Palestinians to return to their homeland.
After the indoor ceremony, a march to the burial place of the martyrs took many back to the bloody events. Some foreign activists say they come every year to tell the world that they will not forget.
Every year, so come here, for don't forget. Because, for example, if I think at 8 September, what happened in New York, all the people speak about this, justo, but nobody speak about this massacre in Sabra Shatila. So we come here every year, and I want to give thank you to the Lebanese people, because in the South Lebanon stopped Israel.
We are here in commemoration of the victims of the massacre 41 years ago. We will never forget. But for the Palestinians, the main thing for the survivors now is to get their rights, both in Lebanon, but most importantly, the right to go back to Palestine, to go back to the land, and to get their freedom. So that's why we are here, to give the people here a support in their long-time fight for freedom and rights.
Relatives of the victims of the massacre filed a lawsuit against former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon in September 2003, but Belgium's Supreme Court dismissed the war crimes case. Arab activists believe that Palestinians have not achieved anything through diplomatic and political efforts, and they now have no choice but resistance.
Palestinians started in 1965 with resistance, and they will continue with resistance because they have no other option. It's not that they don't want peace. They do want peace. They want harmony in the world, but they are not given any rewards for that. So therefore, they will have to fight.
and resistance is the only way.
The Lebanese right-wing Falange militia stormed the Sabra and Shatila towns in September 1982 with the assistance of Israeli soldiers and tanks, which were occupying Lebanon at the time. After 2 days and two nights, around 3,500 people were allegedly killed or went missing. 41 years on the horrendous Sabra and Shatila massacre, no one has been held accountable. The speakers and activists attending the ceremony to mark the tragedy stressed that the only means to find accountability is through continuous struggle and resistance. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Allegations of racism rocked the UK's Labour Party again. On the receiving end, one of its own MPs, Britain's first female black member and a lifelong anti-racism campaigner, Diane Abbott. In April, she wrote a letter to the Observer newspaper suggesting Jewish, Irish, and traveler people were not subject to racism all their lives, and that although white people with points of difference suffer prejudice, they have not suffered the same racism as black people. Comments deemed racist and anti-Semitic. The backlash was immediate. She apologized, but was suspended pending an investigation. Yet in an open letter published on X this week, she's accused Labour leader Keir Starmer of trying to oust her from Parliament by ensuring she cannot stand for the party.
As a black woman and someone on the left of the Labour Party, I have unfortunately been forced to reach the conclusion that I will not get a fair hearing from this Labour leadership.
Last year, an Al Jazeera documentary exposed apparent anti-black discrimination and a hierarchy of racism in Labour under Keir Starmer. An example of that, earlier this year, right-wing Labour MP Neil Coyle, who racially abused a journalist and had a sexual harassment complaint upheld against him, was reinstated after only a five-day suspension. Abbott was shadow interior minister under former leader Jeremy Corbyn, who was blocked as a Labour MP over an anti-Semitism row in 2020. We asked former Labour mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, who knows Diane Abbott, for his take.
She's been a committed person challenging all forms of racism and prejudice. And this was nothing to do with racism. I mean, who is an occasion going to make a mistake in something they say or write? But as I say, this was about getting rid of Jeremy Corbyn, and she was one of Jeremy's longest friends and solid supporters.
Some of her other colleagues are saying that Abbott is being thrown out of here because she does not conform to the domestic neoliberal policy and rejects the ongoing UK imperialist ambitions, that she should not have sought to placate the Labour leadership. Instead, they say, she should have stood up for what she believed in from the start, because there was never going to be a way back for her. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Supporting young innovators and home to knowledge-based companies developing high-tech industries. Paradis Technology Park is taking major steps in commercializing technological achievements, and the 21st annual meeting of the park this year proudly became the venue for celebrating the accomplishments of a new generation of inventors.
Today, Paradis Technology Park has created a standard environment that allows young minds to flourish. It allows them to pursue their goals. With an area of about 500 hectares, we are home to knowledge-based companies that are saving us hundreds of millions of dollars in imports. Every year on this day, we present a number of new products.
On the sidelines of the event, 12 new products were unveiled, from deep drilling robots and software for simulating drilling operations to granulated food products. High-tech is the name of the game.
The technology that we have developed is quite unique. We have managed to develop the know-how to produce granulated products in pharmaceutical dosage forms. This new technology will allow a predictable and repeatable process, which is essential in the pharmaceutical industry. Up until now, our company has been able to enter the market for food additives. These are actually products that we used to import from other countries, and now I should proudly say that the entire procedure from A to Z is carried out in Iran.
notable achievements that are even more impressive considering harsh Western sanctions on Iran.
There is something called the willpower of strong people. And today we're witnessing that in Pardis Technology Park. This is what happens when the government decides to support their young innovators. They overcome all obstacles, including sanctions.
Our main activity concerns marketing the products of knowledge-based companies. We mostly focus on the oil and gas sector. However, this year we are also trying to get those products that are competitive into the world market. We have talked to Chamber of Commerce about that.
With efforts made by these young inventors, products labeled Made in Iran will soon be in demand on the global market.
Supporting innovation and new ideas, Pardis Technology Park is looking forward to gaining a foothold in the international market. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
On the picket line again, up to 60,000 of England's junior doctors. What is different this time? They're joined by 20,000 of their senior counterparts for the first time, all asking to be paid what they deserve.
We do this with a heavy heart, but our salaries have been falling in real terms for 14 years. My salary in real terms is 35% lower than it was 14 years ago. Unfortunately, the Prime Minister refuses to talk with doctors about pay, and so have been forced to do this.
Junior doctors are asking for a 35% restoration, while their senior counterparts are asking for an above-inflation pay rise. In July, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said there would be no more negotiations on pay and that the rise recommended by the so-called independent pay review body was final. Yet this, the doctors say, isn't just about pay. It's about the depressing state of the NHS. Junior doctor Arjun Singh fears for its future.
If you're having people waiting 12 hours in waiting rooms before they're seen by a doctor, if you're having people having heart attacks and strokes in A&E waiting rooms before they're seen, well, that is a system that has collapsed. And the reason that it has collapsed is in large part because we've not funded our workforce properly. We can't retain doctors. You can't have a hospital and an NHS if your doctors are leaving so frequently.
According to the British Medical Journal, 4 in 10 junior doctors in the UK plan to leave the NHS as soon as they can find another job, at home or abroad. But while the trench warfare continues, delayed appointments have reached the 1 million mark, with the NHS's waiting list already at an estimated 7.6 million.
If the government has any hope of these doctors giving up their industrial action anytime soon, then today's double doctor strike should be a sign that that is simply not going to happen.
With both sides digging in their heels, the strikes could continue into another crippling winter. And for patients on the long waiting list, that could potentially mean months of more misery. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Palestinians keep descending further into poverty and de-development under the Israeli occupation. In a report released on Monday, the World Bank said poverty rates are stubbornly high, as roughly 1 out of 4 Palestinians live below the poverty line. Palestinian non-governmental organizations say the poverty is more severe in Gaza.
In Gaza, the situation is more and more catastrophic comparing to the West Bank due to the blockade and wars for the 16 years. We have high deterioration on the humanitarian conditions, also on the economic standards. Due to this blockade, we have food insecurity.
They say that the Israeli occupation and blockade are the main culprits behind the increase in poverty among Palestinians. The Abu Ajwa family in Gaza's Zeitoun neighborhood, where more than a dozen people reside. Their average daily income is only around $5 a day. The abject poverty has forced them to live in miserable conditions.
Look at my house. It is falling apart and we can't afford to fix it. You can't even imagine how hard it is for me or for my family. Our living conditions and those of many families here are disastrous. We can hardly afford to put food on the table. Poverty has taken its toll on us, and I don't see any improvement to our situation anytime soon.
The situation of the Abu Ajwa family is just a small example of how thousands of people live in the tiny territory. Most Gazans are impoverished and rely on handouts to survive as their incomes continue to dwindle. More than 2 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have been living under intensified access restrictions since 2007 and are largely isolated from the outside world.
The people who are in need for humanitarian assistance, 80% of the population, and most of them children, women, elders, who are in bad need for such assistance. On time, we are suffering from shortage of funding for humanitarian aid. This will lead for more deterioration in the humanitarian and socio-economic situation.
Daily life is a constant struggle for most Gazans because of the inhumane Israeli practices.
According to experts, the Israeli regime is responsible for the high poverty rate and the near collapse of Palestine's economy, as well as its isolation from the rest of the world. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
According to the EU's own official data, 74% of small and medium-sized businesses within the 27-country bloc cannot find skilled workers. At the same time, millions of young people are unemployed. EU Youth Affairs Ministers met on Monday and Tuesday to discuss the crisis.
I think it's very obvious that we have a generation of young people who have been living through crisis after crisis since 2008. The financial crisis, the COVID pandemic, and now they're going through the consequences of a war at the heart of Europe.
The neglect of young adults in the EU was acknowledged last week in the European Parliament.
8 million young people are neither in employment, nor in education, nor in training. 8 million. Their dreams put on hold, their lives on standby.
Youth ministers have agreed to coordinate efforts across the EU to try and fix broken education systems.
One in every six Europeans has mental health problems, not just young people, but also older people connected to loneliness and isolation, for example. Every European with mental health issues has a right to access help mechanisms.
It's a right, but experts say help is often unavailable. Apparently, there's a need to prioritise funding.
We have debts and deficits, so the challenge really is how to reconcile this continuous pressure on public budgets, which health is placing, with the broader macroeconomic context.
It is being suggested that allowing young people to fall through the cracks while focusing all resources on the war in Ukraine threatens the future of the entire EU project. According to campaign groups advocating for the rights of young people, the inability of the political establishment in the EU to bring about job opportunities is translating into growing support for extreme anti-EU political parties. It's thought this disquiet will become clearly evident in 9 months from now, when a record number of Eurosceptic candidates are forecast to be successful during European Parliament elections. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Date February 11th, 1983. I thank God for this blessing that with his invisible favor he brought about such a divine transformation, the victory of the Islamic Revolution in this oppressed and vulnerable nation, and granted them victory by the grace of his omnipotence over the enemies of Islam and humanity. I implore his sacred court to sustain these blessings and favors to this nation, nation of Iran, and to grant them to all the Muslims of the world.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from Arab English Radio. Well, what we do in this program is to list